Accession number 19795, Reel 2.
What was the period in quarantine like?
The quarantine was the worst thing, and already the first selection, natural selection, would happen. Everything had to be done quickly. And somehow, an old prisoner who was sort of doing some sort of job told us, never hit anybody, because once you hit a little bit, then harder, and then you discover that you like doing it. And you could become a sort of professional killer. And another thing, he warned us not to drink the water, because the water was somehow contaminated. It was a very damp place among two rivers, and always damp. And from that water, if you drank that water unboiled, you got diphtheria. And the diphtheria could finish a man in 5 days. Out of a normal man, you become a skeleton. So I kept rigidly to that advice. And somehow, being young, I survived the 2 months of quarantine without shoes, without any extra clothes, and with sort of stupid work doing, collecting. We had to reverse our jackets and carrying either sand or stones from one place to another and then back, but all the time running. And with the brutality, and because later we were allowed to have parcels. Jewish people never got parcels because they didn't have anybody on the other side. So wherever possible, we could either share it. The most treasured thing was garlic, of course. Onion, any fatty things, bread. Surprisingly, the parcels arrived. That is the German discipline. They were not plundered or anything, they did arrive. And we could use them or buy something for them. But not on the quarantine. After 2 months, I was sent to the main lager and then worked. It was called Durchschall Kommando, which we dug trenches, so to speak, to get rid of the water because there was a lot of dampness there. And the work was, where we were digging, it was very near crematorium number 5. And people keep on going there, and being burned, gassed.
Did you ever worry that... I think we'll just cut there, actually, because I think what we're going into is going to go on. We're just going to change the tape.
Yes,
Alex.
Yes.
When we've got the new tape in, I think I will ask you just to...
Reel 2 continued.
So, Alex, if you could just describe your barracks and the conditions, the physical conditions that you were in, and perhaps who your friends were in the barracks, and then after that, talk about some of your contacts with other groups of people in the camp. So if you start with talking about your barracks.
Yes. The The barracks in the D camp, so-called, where we went to work, it contains over 500 people. Where we were sleeping, there were three layers, so to speak. The healthiest one, the strongest one, went up on the top floor. The weakest one stayed on the bottom part. The capo and the people who looked after were always very brutal, because they were dividing the bread, and they kept always for themselves more than for the other. It was impossible to be friendly with all of us, because there were so many. So people usually kept in sort of five groups, because there was any running, any one of us fall, you could lift him and help him. But if somebody else's fell, you didn't stop. It was the condition very like jungle. It was difficult time, except we could be friendly only to these few people. Sometimes when we came back, there was bread already put in our beds. In one case, some people stole this bread because everybody was hungry, but it meant death to the other. The Germans couldn't care how the bread is divided, as long as they were given the bread and finished. And the punishment for stealing bread, you had to commit suicide. And often, people who should not steal were stealing. And professional thieves wouldn't touch it. Somehow, the education and upbringing we get is very superficial. It's somehow we are very naked and behave accordingly. It was surprised that an official of a courtroom, a judge, would steal and a thief would not. And of course, with such punishment, harsh punishment, the stealing stopped. Sometimes on Sunday we didn't go to work, and then it was common for us, if it was summer, to have your shirt and kill the lice we had, because lice everybody had. Now and then they tried to get rid of it. Our clothes went into a sort of liquid, and we had to rush through a washroom with a drip of water. If that was done in summer, but everything running, beating, all the time. And if that was done in winter, after such exercise, there were a lot of dead people. They couldn't stand it, couldn't run, couldn't. I was young, and my group was young. I survived. Unfortunately, there wasn't room for compassion.
Do you remember some of the people in your group?
Sorry?
Do you remember some of the people in your group?
Yes, I remember the boys. Eventually we were all went into different places. I met one in Krakow after, now when I went to see Auschwitz, I met one of them, and it was a very pleasant hugging and talking. And once we met with Jewish people after the liberation in London, from Romanian Jewish people, from Paris, French people, Dutch people. And the irony is that when we eventually got drunk and singing, the only songs we could sing were the German songs, which we heard and learned in Auschwitz. We laughed about it while we were singing, of course with different words than the German intended, some very rude ones.
Back in Auschwitz, what kind of contact did you have with other groups of people apart from Poles?
The most tragic contact we had in the camp where I went to work was with the Sonderkommando, with the Jewish people who worked in the crematorium. What they described, what they had to do, was so horrible. One man said that in the group he had to burn the bodies of his wife and his children. He was crying all night and you couldn't help him anything. And the Sonderkommando lived under a sentence of death, because usually after 3 months, 3-4 months, the Germans suspected them getting insane, and they tried to gas them, not there, but taking them out somewhere to kill them. They knew about it. And I think in 1943, when the Germans tried to transport Sonderkommando out of crematorium number 5, they rebelled. They killed a few SS. I was told that one SS man was thrown alive into the oven. And they tried to escape. It was helpless, of course, because outside were machine guns and standing SS men. I was told that some escaped. Our blocks, we had to go to the barracks and not to look through the windows or anything, but of course there are always gaps and we saw what went on. Any of that sort of commotion we could recognize straight away, because the Germans were shouting again, quick, 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 and shouting very loudly, like a dog's bark. So we knew what's happening.
I believe your barracks was near the gypsy camp. Did you have any contact with them?
Yes. After the usual, like everybody else, after the illnesses, I had typhus, TB, pluralis, and other illnesses, I don't know the names. I was in hospital and nearly died, but knowing German, eventually I became a clerk on barrack with ill people. The doctors were Jewish. One was Dr. Robert Levy from Strasbourg. He was eventually a witness in Nuremberg trials, was a very known surgeon. I went to see him after the liberation, and again he took me to synagogue, and I was singing there. I already knew some German Jewish song, being so long with Jewish people. In the hospital in Birkenau was practically next to the crematorium, especially number 4 and 5. The hospital was next to Gypsy camp. So we had quite a lot of contact with the Gypsy, talking. I had a sort of girl which I talked to quite a lot. And in 44, 43, don't remember that, they started a selection in Gypsy camp. And I told this girl, who was quite fragile, try to get to work. But of course she wasn't chosen. And the women and men were transported out. And the next night, all the gypsies were taken to number 5 and 4 and gassed, killed. This sort of gassing of people, killing people, had terrible effect on us. It's very difficult to describe, especially in hospital, where the SS, especially for Jewish holidays like Yom Kippur, would select Jewish people. It was called transport. It's never called, of course, gas, transport. But especially Polish Jews knew what it meant. And after a month or two, one becomes quite friendly with the ill people. I remember one young Polish Jew who had a broken leg. He was selected, and he told me, I can't go on, I know what it happens, you have to go there and wait for the gas. It took 5 to 10 minutes till the whole gas chamber was killed. So I bought him some pill from the chemist, and he didn't take it on my barracks, only when they collected to one barracks, and it was our barracks were closed, and they transported them to the gas chamber. And sometimes...
Could you just tell me, how were you able to get hold of poison for this young...
Sorry?
How were you able to get hold of poison for this young Jewish Pole?
In the chemist shop, in charge was a SS chemist, of course, but the workers were prisoners. The same in X-ray, they were making X-rays even. And the prisoners were doing it, either craftsmen or they knew how to do it. And as I had parcels from Warsaw, with onions, with bread, with garlic. So I think I give a garlic for this. The prisoner knew what for it was. They gave it to me. That sort of things went on. Even if a man went for X-ray and he had TB, the prisoners could put another man's thing. Usually the Germans, the Jewish people who went into gas chamber were not given numbers. The one after the selection, men and women who were sent to the lager as prisoners were given numbers. To begin with, they used to give the numbers like we had. But somehow the Germans discovered that if a Pole died and the number was very near, like a Jewish number, you could easily make out of 3-8 or something, change the number a little. And before burning the bodies, the German would say, oh, this number, dead. So the Jew could have taken the identity of a Christian. In that crowd, very seldom they were checking if a man is circumcised or not, because it was already crowded and they couldn't do it. So when they selected the Jewish people for the holiday, for the Jewish holiday, like Yom Kippur, some Jews were praying, some were cursing. I played the Hatikvah, they were singing, Jewish hymn now in Israel, beautiful song, sad, very melancholic. It was the atmosphere of helplessness. When I was in the underground, I had a gun behind my belt. I was somebody. I was walking straight. Nobody could touch me. I was strong. Down there, with such horrible deaths around, a different person.
Amidst all that horror, what things, on a daily basis, what kind of things helped you to survive from day to day?
In hospitals, we had quite a lot of free time. And there were quite a lot of educated people, professors of history, geography, travelers. They used to lecture. I remember a man called from Łódź, a musician, conductor, Mr. Cebula, Jewish. He was talking about... we never were bored. And this man was selected for transport. And the SS doctor, Dr. Kramer, who talked to me like a human to a human. So I thought I've got a chance. I asked him to leave Mr. Cebula out of the transport. He looked at me with his fishy, light blue eyes and said, nein. But that was it. There was no discussion or anything.
What kind of things did Mr. Cebula lecture you about?
About, often about the life of the musician, Beethoven, Mozart. It was building and having hope And some people in the camps invented stories that he just been in an SS room where there was a radio, so he switched on BBC, and definitely a message came, in summer there is going to be an invasion. That was 43. So we said, right, till summer we will survive. If somebody told you at the beginning, when you came in, that you have to survive 2 years, 3 years, you would give up. When you gave up, you were dead. Only the hope and the certainty that the Germans will be beaten kept you alive. Sometimes very strong physical men, I remember Hungarian Jews. They were among Hungarian Jews were often farmers with big hands. You could see they were really hard-working men. And they should survive. But often no. They were worried. Who's looking after the cows? Who's looking after the fields? And they die. Country, town people, intelligent people, more versatile, had more chance because they put all their energy for survival. And that was the only way to survive. And survive you wanted, because death there was terrible. The bodies, the grayness, no color. I remember when I was working on the street, getting to the selection where the train came, and out of the selection came, were marching Hungarian Jewesses. Beautiful colors. We couldn't take our eyes off. In the camp, everything was gray. Our cheeks, our clothes, everything else, the sky was often. And these women went into washroom, and in 2 hours' time, they were marched naked, without hair, without anything. So we prisoners turn around not to look them. That annoyed the SS man. He would hit you, turn you around, and looked at them and laughed at the women. We had to stay in the position that he turned us, but we did not look. It was specially for them. It was the pleasure that the women were so degrading, not in our minds, in our eyes. They were sufferers, and we only hoped that they would survive. And I hope too that some of them did, because they were very young.